Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
We're back for episode 27 of Digital Divination. This is our second year now.
That's so right. We're in year two of Digital Divination.
So we're going to turn over a new leaf, right?
That's right. We're going to, do all the same things. We're going to continue with witty banter and talk about Starfinder things.
Yeah, it's funny. I read what Ryan had said about our one-year anniversary episode. He said, yeah, they were surprisingly self-conscious about what they've been doing. And I'm thinking, yeah, I guess we did sound like it. We're going to be unapologetic. We're just going to do our thing.
That's right. And with that, how are you doing, John?
I'm doing pretty well. I had a very quiet weekend. I spent most of my time writing and relaxing.
Oh, that's very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. What about you? How was your weekend?
Well, I had a good friend who, you know, let my family use his beach house. So we went up there and that was fantastic. The weather was a little cool, but not cold. And it was very sunny. It was just a beautiful weekend.
Great. Did you guys get a chance to go out in the water at all, or did you skip that part?
No, the kids voted against it when they sensed the coldness of the water. The closest we got to getting into the water is that we've got one of our two dogs loves playing in the water, loves throwing sticks into the water and have her go get it. None of us, not even me, can throw a stick far enough that she won't swim out, get it, and bring it back.
Wow. I'm guessing that's Pepper, not the other one.
That is Pepper. That is not Lacey. That's Pepper. And she has... So she gets out of the water and she goes to whoever is like, not whoever's closest, but like whoever's not paying attention, and then shakes off right next to them. And so it's a little game to see who Pepper's going to try to shake off next to. And if you're busy talking to somebody else, like I'm talking to my oldest and neither of us are paying much attention to Pepper, guarantee Pepper will come up, barge right in between the two of us and then shake off. So we got plenty wet. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, and in a non-sunny, like today's a nice day. It would have been good to be out there today.
I think so. But we also went to some of the other nearby beaches, the state parks and the like, and that was really cool to see. There's some great, beautiful, beautiful stuff on that island.
Yeah, we like it. We like it quite a bit. Deb and I were just saying how happy we are that some kids got to go and enjoy it. It's like, we don't have any grandkids yet, and I don't think we have any prospects for anytime soon. So we have to, you know, live vicariously through other people's kids having fun out there.
All right. Well, then let me warn you. One way you might live vicariously. I think we found all of the Easter eggs that I hid the night before Easter.
Okay.
In case there's like, you find like a plastic Easter egg with stickers or something inside of it. That was one we missed. I feel like we got them all, but I'm not sure.
All right. So, but it's nothing like my dog will find and want to eat, though, right?
No. I mean, does your dog eat stickers or stamps or stuff?
No. There's no chocolate in them, is what I'm saying.
There is no chocolate in any of them. I didn't want anything that could melt. And I wasn't thinking about when they were hidden. I didn't want anything that was going to melt once the kids were eating them when they'd been found.
Right.
So we had we actually didn't have a whole lot of chocolate with us at all. But no, it should be fine. Jelly beans, I guess, at the worst.
All right, cool. And did you end up ever watching King Kong versus Godzilla? Or
no.
Godzilla
versus King Kong, whatever? No, yeah. So apparently there's the show, and it's on Netflix. We have Netflix here, but there's a show called Julian the Phantoms, which is sort of heartwarming.
Oh, yeah. That's a great show.
I haven't seen it, but my kids, they watched like the first episode, and they loved it, and that's all they wanted to watch. And I think there's only one season out, but I think they watched it like three times. I mean, just over and over, and they're singing all the songs from it and everything. And they came.
Yeah, it's kind of a cute kids, young kids or older kids. I don't know, like a teenager kind of show. Yeah.
Right. You know, mine are 12 and 10 and 10. That's yeah, just kind yeah. of their thing. And they actually yeah. came to us in seriousness, because sometimes in the evenings, the, you know, we as a family will sit down and we'll watch a couple episodes of something like maybe The Mandalorian, or mm-hmm. We're watching WandaVision and Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beast or She-Ra. We've got kind of these shows that we work our way through, and they told us, we don't want to watch any of those. We want to start watching Julie and the Phantoms. I'm like, you've seen it like two times, at least maybe three. It's like, yes, but Mom, Dad, you haven't seen it, and we want to watch it with you. And I'm like, oh, well, that's actually kind of touching.
Yeah. I think one time through I could deal with it. I don't know about multiple times. Oh, man. So I heard you got shot. Are you okay?
I did. In fact, I'm now fully vaccinated, as it turns out.
Oh, you got the Johnson & Johnson?
Yeah, it was the place I signed up through my insurance company, and it was sort of at their corporate headquarters down in Renton. And apparently you kind of show up and you just get what they have for the day, and what they have for the day was the Johnson & Johnson. And so just one shot, and there you go.
My wife is trying to get it on Thursday. Her and her sister are going to take a road trip during the week, and just kind of see, there's the Olympic loop or something. They're going to do some driving, see some parks and stuff. Anyway.
Oh, that'll be kind of nice, actually. Kind of
looking at stopping at, Port Angeles on the way, because they're going to be in that area.
Oh, my. But really, the reason they're going that way is to get the vaccines.
No. They're actually, so my wife's sister wants to visit all the national parks. Now, she just got divorced, and like one of the things she set out to do is, okay, now I want to go visit all the parks kind of myself rather than with
somebody I don't want to be married to anymore. Yeah. Okay.
And so my wife has been going with her on some of them. And so this is a trip. There's three national parks out there, maybe a national four. I don't know what they're going to see. They're going to do some stuff. And
that'd be
spend a couple of days. Yeah. And then they're going to come up to Camino, and we'll be up there over the weekend.
Oh, neat. So. Yeah. I do have to. One of the recent family board games we got is called Trekking the National Parks. And it was,
oh, neat.
It's based on another game. It's like Trekking Europe or something like that. But the map is the United States, and all the spaces you move from place to place to are the national parks. And you're trying to collect stones, and, you know, you want to visit a certain number of them in a certain order or whatever in order to score points. But there's a lot of photographs, and there's little cards about each park. And when we play it, we make whoever lands on a particular park read about it, right? Tell us all about this park. So we kind of vicariously visit the parks through this board game, and that's kind of fun.
Well, my wife kind of wants to visit them all, and it, you know, we had visited, you know, a bunch of them already. And then we went up to Alaska a couple years ago, and went up to Denali and a couple other places, Glacier Bay, to get, you know, there are national parks that are hard to get to. And I got her a national park. It's like a, I don't know, it's like a journal or something, but it has them all. And you get the stamp from the national park while you're there at the office, and you stamp it up. And so that's what she's trying to do. So the two of them together are, you know,
oh, how fun,
figuring this out.
Like a passport kind of where you've,
Yeah, it's a national park passport.
Oh, neat. All right. When do they go to Hawaii?
Well, I don't know that she got any stamps for that, but they have a third sister that lives in Utah. Okay. And so there's like Mount Zion or Zion National Park and a whole bunch of the other ones down there.
I can say the whole bunch of others. I used to live in Utah.
Oh, yeah, do that. So what are they?
It's Canyonlands, Zions, Moab. And then there's Bryce Canyon is the other one.
Yep.
And then,
isn't there like a Five Arches or something?
No, Arches.
Arches. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Oh. So that's part of the plan too. And so, but you know, there's so many of them and they keep making more. It's kind of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I like it. I think that's a really neat thing to be collecting. I think I know somebody, cousin-in-law of mine who wanted to see a game in every Major League Baseball stadium. And that was not something I ever really kind of got behind. National parks I could get behind. That's of more personal interest to me.
Yeah, I don't feel like I need to go to them all, but I would like to help her achieve this. And so I'm happy to go and do things. And so one of the things I thought about is getting like a spinner van and finishing it out for kind of as a stealth camper to do some traveling with. Once our kids grow up and have their own kids and figure out where they're at, we'll probably do some sort of something like that.
I see what you mean. Like the, when they're landed a little more permanently. And...
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So that's just a thought anyway. You know, it's who knows when that's going to happen. You know, my kids are getting old and, you know, maybe they're not going to have kids. I don't know.
I don't know. My kids are never going to be as old as yours, John. I know it. That's...
Yes. Yes. You got a long time. No worry. My youngest is like 11 years older than your oldest.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So with our new year, I was thinking about talking about something that we actually got into quite a bit of discussion in our last actual play episode, and that is dealing with invisibility in Starfinder.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Speaking, I guess maybe we should have segued from Julie and the Phantoms to this.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I'll talk a little bit more off air. I'm working on a project and I'm kind of incorporating some of that stuff in it. And I actually want to bounce something off you to see if, because there's something that's only talked about really, really just like one line in all of Starfinder. And I'm like going to use that and blow it up into something.
Well, good.
And I want to know if you think that's appropriate for what I'm doing.
We often do. There is a kind of it's a longstanding tradition that you put throwaway references to interesting things in the books, yeah, knowing that those are just the hooks that other people will come pick up and then flesh out in a more developed way. We do that on purpose quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, this is something that it's been in other systems in Pathfinder, for example, but it's not really in Starfinder. And so I thought it should be okay, you know, so I'll talk to you more about it. It's
okay.
That's the thing I worked on all weekend. Yeah, I was really excited. You know, I cranked through 3,000 words in just 2.5 days.
Oh, that's not really bad. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, there's a bunch of us on a Discord talking about projects we're working on and you know, trying to keep each other accountable. And it's like, okay, well, I'll play. And so I'm the only one that kind of met the deadline, the goal that we were targeting. So, anyway, so yeah, so, you know, so last week we, our heroes ran into a caster who turned himself invisible and we, you know, kind of dealt with it. Now, when we had run into something similar, like 2 years ago in kind of the finale of another AP we were running into, we had a bunch of issues with the invisible opponent. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, this is something it wasn't quite clear to us precisely in either case what we could do and what we should do. So, you know, for myself, I always kind of make some basic assumptions and kind of wing it from there. I thought it might be good to actually dive into a little bit more about invisible opponents and unseen opponents because they're slightly different things.
Correct. And how you get those varies, right? Because you can become, right, generally you become invisible due to some sort of magical effect. I'm trying to remember there's a technological effect that turns you invisible. I think those have the tendency to be like, yeah, the stealth skill to make you unseen and the like.
Yeah, well, there's actually, so there's, in terms of magical, right, you have spells like invisibility to technology, and then like I think it's mass invisibility, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, is the other one. And then there's a hybrid item called a grandchild's cloak. They have a greater and a lesser, and both of them allow you to become invisible using it.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that. I guess I should have remembered that.
Oh, you wrote that?
I did, yeah.
I was bringing up something you had no idea about.
I mean, just because I wrote it doesn't mean I have any idea about it. Who even knows?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, can you tell me where that came from, by the way? What was the inspiration for that?
That was actually a deity-inspired... mm-hmm, deity-inspired document. Deity-inspired item. What I wanted to do was make sure that we were pulling upon stuff that actually made sense and mattered in the setting. And mm-hmm, one of the deities in the setting is the sort of the god of the Lao Shu Po, who's sort of the mm-hmm, god of assassins and spies and thieves, and he is Grandmother Rat and is pulled for a lot of Yosoki, you know, some fairly worship Lao Shupo, some very unfairly are assumed to be followers of Lao Shupo. But because Lao Shupo is known as Grandmother Rat, the grandchild's cloak is the one that lets you do your grandmother's business of sneaking around and stuff.
And this is a hybrid item that is an armor upgrade. And it kind of uses holographic fields and illusion magic. So it kind of makes sense. And then there's another armor upgrade, and this is just straight technological, and it's called a light wrap inlay. And so it uses glass serpent scales, again, another creature we'd run into with our actual play, to collectively angle light. So basically it kind of reflects away, it bends it around you, whatever. Basically giving you invisibility as well. So several different ways you can get it, magical, technological, and then kind of a hybrid of the two. You mentioned unseen. You can also use the operative exploit cloaking field to not turn invisible, but to stealth really, really good, even in plain sight. So it has a real similar effect as invisibility, as long as you're not moving.
Right. And then there are various aliens that have invisibility or invisibility-like abilities that are just inherent to the kind of creature there. Glass serpents is a fine example of that, but there are plenty that either have the spell-like ability that lets them cast it, or if they, you know, remain motionless for a certain amount of time, then they become unseen or invisible or what have you.
Right, right. Now, so in the situation we were looking at, we had actually, I think in both the situations where we were running in the APs, where we had to fight an opponent, that was not the glass serpent. The glass serpent was a little bit different, but both of these folks were visible, then cast invisibility on themselves. So we knew that they were somewhere around, right? We were aware where they were at, but we did not know precisely where they were for targeting attacks.
Right.
Right. So they're unseen, but they're aware. Now, the glass serpent was unseen, and we were unaware, or I was the GM, so you all were unaware, in particular your character, Scooch.
That's right, that it was even there.
Yeah, you weren't even aware that it was there. Now, for becoming aware of something when you don't know that it's there, you have to make a perception check. And basically, this is a, like a skill challenge of your perception versus their stealth. And when you're invisible, you basically get a plus 40 bonus to stealth checks.
Right. That's how well hidden you are. And you don't need anything to hide behind because you're just invisible standing there.
Right. And the cloaking field does something similar. Now, if your unseen creature moves, that reduces down to plus 20. Right. And so that's kind of one of the issues. Now, we had some of our party that had blind sense of some sort, and that will allow you to become aware of an unseen creature. And so like it's an additional way beyond making a perception check to merely become aware, right? So that's kind of the first step. Either you see it and it becomes invisible, so you're aware it's there, or it's invisible, you make a perception check, become aware it's there, or you have some other ability that you can sense where it's at and you become aware that it's there.
Right.
So that's in various stages.
And in Starfinder, a lot of those still fall under blind sense or blind sight because they are, some of them trigger not based on visual senses, but echolocation or being able to sense emotions or something like that.
Yeah, vibration, smell, emotion, sound. Those are the various blind senses. And it could be other ones as well.
Right.
You know, people want to develop something, you know, particular.
Well, and that actually can be really interesting to determine, to make some monster feel particularly unique, right? Like a monster that can always tell whenever they've got a sense, whenever somebody has cast a spell on somebody else, right? Oh, you immediately know who those people are because it senses the waves of magic that connect creatures together or something like that. You can see how you could make kind of an interesting creature with a new application of blindsight or blind scent.
Yeah. And again, this thing I'm working on, I'm actually doing something like that. And so I'll bounce it off you afterwards.
Aha.
Yeah, that's actually really good. So that's kind of the first stage. And so in our cases, for the most part, we became aware of these creatures that were in the space and invisible. And the question that we got was, okay, how do we specifically attack them, given that's what the party was trying to do? Now, if you are aware of where it's at, right, you are aware it's there, you can attempt to make a perception check to figure out kind of where the creature's location is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And that'll figure out the location. The creature's location is not well defined in the rules, and I've had GMs that kind of run the gamut from, you know, the creature's location, it's in this square. You just can't see it, but it's in this square. And I've had GMs on the other side who are like, well, you know that it's on the west side of the room, right? That's as much as you know. You know its location is currently the west side of the room.
Right, right. And that's, you know, I was trying to dig that up because this is one of the issues that we ran into. Is that when I was running it, I did not allow people to know precisely the square that the creature was in part because the creature was moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you knew it was kind of here, but it was moving. And also in our particular instance, we had one person that had seen visibility. We had another person that did not have, did not make a perception check to even tell where the creature was, right? To be able to generally locate it. And I guess the thing that came up is, can somebody who can see an invisible creature, what information can they convey to somebody who can't even perceive where they're at? And what, how does that raise that individual on this kind of continuum of, you know, unaware, aware, perceived, and then being able to attack it? And that's something I actually want to discuss with you. We talked about this a little bit in our game, and I'm actually curious how you would perceive or how you would adjudicate that as a GM.
Oh, sure. From a two initial points to answer that question. The overall initial point is that I think invisible creatures are a little bit like mazes, right? They're the kind of thing that if you're experiencing it as a character in the game, it's generally a lot more thrilling than if you've got kind of this top-down view of everything going on as a player who has a character in the game. It's one of the reasons mazes don't work very well. It's because the players can just look down at the battle mat and go, oh, we go left, then right, then we're out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And simulating that is hard. I think invisibility comes up with the same situation. It's kind of fun and thrilling to be in a situation where somebody is in the room with us and they keep attacking, but we have no idea where they are. And being kind of top down, you're like, oh, well, this person attacked you over here, and then it moved and attacked this person over here. And we know that its movement is done with, so it's got to be kind of in or near this square, right? You can be kind of game out where the creature happens to be. And the second point I want to bring up is that you'd mentioned the states of awareness that Starfinder has. Sets these out pretty clearly to say unaware, aware of the presence, aware of the location, the specific location, and then observing them directly. Mm-hmm. I tend to lean to, I think that a 50% mischance for not being able to see a creature is pretty onerous. In fact, it's almost more than sufficiently onerous. So I'm fairly liberal about letting people who could see an invisible creature say, oh, it's over there. It's in this square. You know, they point to it. They have a laser sight. There's something. They can communicate freely and effectively to everybody else. Here is the square it is in. So everybody else is aware of location. I think that you, and frankly, a lot of other game masters are in the camp of, well, if somebody can point out, somebody who can see it and point it out where it is, kind of the best they can give to other people is aware of presence. Mm-hmm. Until that person who is aware of its presence then succeeds at a perception check in order to find it. And then they are aware of location, even if they can't observe it. You've got to kind of earn that last step with a successful perception check. Whereas I tend to kind of just give it. Because I know even if everybody knows right where the person is, they've got a 50% mischance, and that makes it, you kind of, there are several things you can't use against it. Spells that require a line of sight, you don't see it, can't use it. Mm-hmm. If you've got, you know, some sort of, you know, big effect you've been saving or some sort of, you know, overcharged shot, well, maybe you don't want to use it because you're going to miss half the time, even if you hit the high enough on the attack roll. So I think that tends to be fairly punitive already, fairly limiting already. And so mm-hmm. I don't mind being a little freer with the aware of location.
You know, I'm actually kind of the opposite with the 50% mischance.
Okay.
In that I think somebody being invisible and actively trying to be invisible, you know, so they're not attacking and whatnot. You know, if you've ever been, I'll give you an example. So if you've ever been below decks on a ship and all the power goes out, right, you know exactly where you are, but you can't see anything until the emergency power goes on. And it's like, okay, I know there are people around me. I just saw this person right here, mm-hmm. right? The power goes out, your whole spatial awareness, right, of where they are, even if none of you have moved, the fact that it's, you just can't see where people are, the likelihood that I could get anywhere near that person, if I were firing into that square, you know, firing in that general direction, I think it's way less than 50% chance of hitting them.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, and now certain circumstances, maybe you have a bigger creature, smaller creature, things like that. But you know, I guess I'm thinking too much in a realistic manner versus in a game mechanic manner like that you are, you know, for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I also don't want to devalue the power of invisibility too much. You know, basically, if you have a group of six people and you're all mobbed around somebody and they're invisible, in essence, then they're not, right?
Right.
Then you're all going to have a good shot to beat on the person.
Everybody's aware of their location in that situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, and for me, quite frankly, with our group, you know, we're pretty powerful. These things, if they can't use their gimmicks as best as they can, they don't stand a chance.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I guess that's true.
So, you know, I got to, and plus I really wanted, you know, to show the value of having the ability to do things to identify invisible creatures, which we talked about. Now, we haven't mentioned it here yet. One of the neat fusions out there you can get is a liming fusion. Basically, when you hit, I don't know if it's liming or lining, actually, when I say that.
I think it's limning.
Limning?
L-I-M-N is to illuminate with light.
Oh,
but I don't know. Okay. But I don't know whether that'd be limning or limbing or
okay.
or what.
So, but that fusion, basically, when you hit the creature, it shows everybody where it's at, right?
Okay.
And so that or other, you know, we talked about having, we had some glitter grenades we could have used and, you know, other things like that. Now, I think it'd be great to see a party do something creative. And in this particular room that our group was in, you know, there were bed sheets and stuff everywhere. Just kind of throw them out that thing. Maybe see some, you know, there's a lot of things that could have been done. Rather than just saying, oh, well, you know, I'm trying to see it and I don't make my perception roll. And, you know, we had somebody not being happy because I wasn't allowing them to target the creature. Now, that said, you know, you mentioned spells. So area effect spells, if you know the general location, should be able to work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even if you're only
you don't.
Well, even if you're aware of presence, right? If you're able to say, yeah. All right, well, you know he's on the west side of that room. Yeah. All right, well, then let me throw out a cone spell that is going to cover that whole west side of the room. All right, mm-hmm. Well, then you get them. You don't need to know any more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if you have it that close enough, which somebody pointing might do for you. In this particular instance, the creature had also put up a holographic duplicate and had moved. So conceivably, probably what they should have done, just fire at the general direction of both of them.
Right.
But because I didn't allow them to know precisely where, they didn't even take the shot, which I thought was interesting. You know, they were kind of questioning, could they do this? Could they do this? Rather than just doing it and see what the result was.
Right. Knowing that the result, even if it were a poor result, would inform whoever was going after you in the initiative order.
Right.
Right.
Like, and
go do that. Right.
Right. And that's one of the things I don't like about players, that they're really trying to metagame. Should I even bother taking this action? I don't know. Trying to find out what the result would be. So ahead of time to see if they could do something better instead, rather than just doing it and seeing it. You know, go ahead.
I think that's true. Part of the reason I think people tend to be a little hesitant about that is because invisibility is what I didn't make up this term, but I heard this, gosh, decades ago in the concept of game design. It's a neener power, right? It's like when you're running around playing games with you know, kids, right? It's like, I hit you. Aha, no, you didn't. Neener. I mean, it's something that turns what would in other circumstances be a success, like a hit. Actually, it's a failure. And there are entire games built this way where, all right, well, you make an attack on another character, a monster or whatever, and then they make a defense roll. And if their defense roll is high enough, you just miss, right? It's a kind of a game based on neener. But in a game that doesn't have it very much, it feels pretty demoralizing. My wife, the first feat that she takes for any third 3.5 based edition is blind fight. Because that I can't see you, I swing, I miss, just feels bad to her. So getting at least another shot at it to make the mischance 25% rather than 50%. Helps even a little bit on that. And so it makes her feel better about it. She's particularly demoralized by neener type powers. And I think that's just going to depend on the players, right? If you see people aren't making attacks when they feel like they might fail due to invisibility, due to, you know, concealment, stuff like that, that's probably because they're just a little bit more risk averse when it comes to those types of powers.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, another thing I noticed with blind fight as well, and is that, you know, that only applies to melee attacks.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, I was looking at that. It says when you're close up, the idea being that ranged attacks are exceptionally hard to make against invisible creatures, which again I think makes sense because if you're have you fired a weapon before? Fire guns and things?
No, I mean, other than, you know, paintball guns, the occasional airsoft things.
Yeah, even a paintball gun, anything that travels at velocity. So airsoft, you know, like a Nerf gun isn't going to do it, but something that goes at velocity.
Right.
If you were off even like 1 degree, right, depending on your range, you're going to miss your target.
Right, and the range doesn't have to be very far for you to turn that 1 degree off into a miss.
Right. And so, you know, for me, it's like, again, if you're targeting a particular square, you don't know where you're doing, whatever. If you don't know where the thing is and you're trying to target something by it, it's hard to make that shot. And harder, I think, than people realize in the gaming circumstance. So we used to have to, in the service, we had to doing law enforcement, we had to recertify every 6 months on all our weapons. Which means you had to go through all the range training and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that, you know, even though the target's relatively good size, you still miss it a lot if you're not really carefully aiming. And if that thing is moving at all, like even like if it were fluttering in the wind, you know, and a creature like moving in its space is part of a normal being there action. I mean, in a game, we don't presuppose creatures freeze, right? When they end their movement, you know, that makes it really challenging. So anyway, I think it's tough. And the other thing I'll say is, you know, with your wife is, you know, she learned that I don't like this. I need to do something about it.
Yep.
I like to take the same thing as well, especially if I have a soldier who has got tons of combat feats. Oh man, I always take it. always take it. You know, blind fight, try to get something else like that. Or even, you know, they have armor upgrades that allow you to see invisibility. You know?
Take those in order to try to overcome the problem. Yep.
Yeah, and that works against concealment and things like that as well, so not just invisible creatures. Now, that armor upgrade, I believe, is a 10th level upgrade, so it's harder to get, you know, you got to be higher level and stuff. But blind fight, you can take it first level.
Yep.
You know, so.
Although, as you say, it applies to melee, which I think you've convinced me. It makes some sense that blind fight to let you eliminate your, or give you a reroll on a mischance shooting at somebody all the way across the room is probably a pretty unreasonable thing for a first level feat to do.
Right. I agree. I'm just going to just double. I was reading it today for something else. I just want to make sure that I'm getting that right. Mm-hmm. In melee. So the nice thing about blind fight as well is it doesn't make you flat footed against attacks from creatures you can't see as well, which I think is kind of neat.
Yep. So it's almost like a plus two AC bonus sometimes, right?
Right. So I don't think there's any good solution for characters or GMs, but I think understanding, you know, going from unaware to aware of your general location and then to actually be able to see the creature, knowing these are steps you have to go through in order to actively attack it. There's no blind fight for spellcasting though, is there?
Yeah, I wonder whether or not that's because a lot of spellcasters, obviously, the technomancers even more than mystics, there's a lot of area effect spells. And so I wonder whether they assume, all right, we don't need to give blind fight to a technomancer because technomancers have more area effect stuff that if somebody's invisible, they just need to have those prepared to use. And I think that's might be right.
Right. And then if you're using a touch spell, then I would say that blind fight would come into play for that, right? Because you got to still hit their AC.
It's still a melee. Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
All right. Now, in general, do you ever use as a character? Do you like using invisibility to make it neener against the monsters?
Sometimes. The problem is invisibility is kind of easy to come by, but drops as soon as you attack. And what do characters spend a lot of time doing? Attacking. It's the higher level, greater invisibility that is useful to have somebody attack and stay invisible. But by the time you can get greater invisibility, there are a lot of other solid contenders for what spell to take. So in my experience, unless you're kind of built around greater invisibility, then being invisible has a better narrative use in evading guards and getting into a place or maybe out of a place unseen than it does as an in-combat tactic, which is not to say that I haven't used it, haven't adventured with people that have seen it used. I think if you're going to use it, though, the thing you have to keep in mind is it can be really debilitating for other members of your party who might want to cast a spell on you, like to heal you, for example. Well, they don't know where you are necessarily, right? if they've got their own ranged effects and they don't actually know what square you're in, well, you might be in the area of effect of something that they're trying to cast. So it can be as much a detriment as an advantage sometimes, especially if you've got a really trigger happy party.
Yeah, I think for somebody who's all about offense, I think it's tough. Somebody who likes to hang back and do buffing your own players or, you know, doing summons or other non-combat things. And I've run into some characters that just like to do that. Then I think invisibility is a great way to kind of further stay out of trouble. You know, you're not even presenting yourself as a target, yet you're still able to aid in the kind of the party's efforts to win the battle.
Yeah, I can see that. And I can see that use. I think that if you are counting on being invisible to avoid attacks by creatures, that shows that your GM is doing something right? By keeping a clear and present threat on you rather than just assuming your GM's always going to go for the front line and then have the pins fall down. The only reason you'd be willing to cast invisibility if you're staying in the back is because you know at some point you've learned maybe I'm not completely safe in the back. And that's a good thing for the game, right? I don't think anybody should be in a combat and feel like, oh, I'm totally safe here. I don't have anything to worry about. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, when we're going against NPCs, oftentimes the groups I'm in, if we see casters in the back, hey, that's what we want to focus on, because we know they're the big area effect. It's oftentimes huge damage dealers, oftentimes have big debuffs. So let's take them out and then worry on about the front line. And now when you're playing against creatures and stuff, oftentimes we can't assume they have intelligence to differentiate between the thing banging on them and the thing behind that might potentially be doing something.
Yep. No, I think that's absolutely right.
All right. Well, I think this was a good little dive into invisibility. Actually, I have a better square in my mind how to use this. Now, I did have one instance earlier in the AP where I got to play with invisibility. I don't know if you remember that. There was somebody who was escaping, and they had invisibility and ghost sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought that was a lot of fun together. Basically, they were trying to get out when your party was physically trying to block them leaving without knowing where they were. And so they cast other spells to kind of draw you away from a location and things like that, which I thought that was kind of a unique use. And it made, now every time when you guys hear a noise, you know, we have folks in the party say, oh, maybe that's ghost sound. Maybe it's not really happening.
Yeah, we've learned, right? Like you say, with invisibility, with ghost sound, anything, the players will learn.
Yeah. So I think that's great. All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.